Okay, fun seekers. Oh boy, have we got a presentation for you. We are going to do our best to get our arms around this industry, this huge behemoth, this huge juggernaut of the mutual fund industry. It's not easy. There are dozens of categories, dear students. We're going to see them at the end of the presentation, according to Morningstar. We want you to remember just the most important categories. So follow our presentation carefully, study, get out that study guide, quiz yourself, however you study, flashcards, outlining, whatever. We want you to know these categories and realize that these are the major categories. There are subcategories and sub sub subcategories and sub 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 subcategories. Because the industry is huge. No one person could know everything there is to know about the mutual fund industry. Starting on slide 41, we're going to go from the most aggressive to the least aggressive, the riskiest mutual funds to the least riskiest. And what I want you to do is to run on over to the class website, it's on Canvas also. And grab this document right here, the Mutual Funds Type Scramble Sheet. There's a commentary, as there is usually with most documents. I did my best to visually put these categories in some kind of disorder order. And I tried using automated software, which would do all the graphics and everything, and I failed miserably, so I just wrote it out. So have this document printed, or relatively easy to access. It's not a bad document to use to study the categories that we're going to go through. Okay, so grab that mutual fund scramble sheet. The first category is called aggressive growth funds. These are actually not the most aggressive funds out there. There's one or two or three categories even more speculative than aggressive growth. You might see the word pro or ultra or momentum. There's used to be a mutual fund called Janus 20. Janus 20. Well, Janus is the name of the mutual fund company. They've since merged with Henderson Funds. I can't remember. But the fund name was 20. Now, what a dumb name. Well, not if you go back to our first presentation and remember that a mutual fund by the Investment Company Act of 1940 must have at least 20 different stocks. If it's a stock mutual fund, 20 different bonds. If it's a bond mutual fund. Right. And we said that they usually have at least 100 or 200 or more. So what was Janus 20 communicating to the world? We are going to be very concentrated. We are not going to have many choices, and we're going to concentrate in only the most confirm the stocks with our most highest conviction. Well, this worked great during the dot-com bubble, and it worked miserably poorly when the tech world crashed. And what happened to Janus 20? It was high flying. It was all in the buzz in the newspapers. And then when it crashed, it was all in the newspapers for not the same wrong for all the wrong reasons. And what did Janus do? They did what many mutual fund companies, they buried the evidence. Right. They rolled Janus 20 into another mutual fund called Janus 40. And I haven't checked if Janus 40 is still around, but this is what happens in the industry, folks. Be careful. Companies will do their best to hide funds that have performed badly. And as we said back in chapter one, presentation one, I'm sorry, presentation one for mutual funds, they're not supposed to be doing this. This is not the reason why you have a mutual fund. You have a mutual fund for diversification. You have a mutual fund for professional money management. But some people, they want to roll the dice. They want that aggressive growth, and they want to make outsized gains, eye-popping returns. And with that, expect to see eye-popping failures. All right, do you want to eat well or do you want to sleep well? And so if you do indeed want to have an aggressive growth fund, fine, just realize that there's going to be times when it's going to drop 40, 50, 60, 70%, dear students. So I don't know if this analogy makes sense or not, but think about it. Think of a buffet. And you're going to fill your plate. You're going to fill your plate with foods, but the foods are mutual funds. The aggressive growth funds and their Ultra, Momentum Pro, whatever, they're a tiny little bit. Spice, a little bit of spice. Do you fill your plate with jalapeno peppers and no, habaneros? No. You put a little bit of spice on the plate, right? And so I don't do any personally, and I don't recommend that people do, but some people, they're willing to accept the risk. The next category are growth funds. These are mutual funds whose primary goal is capital gains and long-term growth. And typically they're going to invest in high growth companies. So how are they different from aggressive growth? Well, it depends on the fund, right? Some aggressive growth funds are very aggressive. Some growth funds are very aggressive, and some are not so aggressive. You have to research the fund. There's one very long-term growth fund called AmCap, which is kind of a silly name, American Capital or whatever, I don't know. But their motto is, long-term growth. When you look at their materials, they show pictures of sequoia trees, that have grown to the sky. So they're not trying to take a tiny little tree and make it explode. They're taking big trees and watching them grow even bigger. So that's what you have to dig for. You have to read everything you can about the mutual fund. And of course, if you have a advisor, they will do their best to explain to you the advantages and disadvantages. Okay, so you ready? Because now it's going to get even stranger. The next category are capital appreciation funds on slide 42. Well, now, wait a minute. What's the difference between capital appreciation and growth? Aren't they the same things? Well, depends on the fund. Capital appreciation funds are mutual funds that seek long-term growth of capital. But they are much more flexible than a growth fund. In the prospectus, most growth funds will have some provision that says we will invest primarily in growth stocks, usually staying between 80% and 100% invested in the market. Capital appreciation funds can often invest in anything they like and anywhere they like. So they might invest in companies that are not growing just because they think they can grow the capital. They see a company that's out of favor, that is selling at a discount to what they believe is their intrinsic value, their value. So they will buy them and watch them go back to what they think is their value and then sell them. And so these tend to, I like the idea of a broad brush. I don't know if that makes any sense. They paint with a broad brush. Whereas growth funds, aggressive growth funds, will typically look for growth stocks. Capital appreciation funds might invest in any type of stock. And we'll learn about the different stocks in the next chapter. There's a very well-known mutual fund called Fidelity Magellan. It was run by Peter Lynch from 1977 to 1990. Luckily for Mr. Lynch, it was and still is a capital appreciation fund, which meant Mr. Lynch did not have to just invest in growth stocks. And it turns out his style of investing was just very eclectic, which is a fancy word for everything goes. He invested in all types of companies, growth companies, not growth companies, something called defensive companies, cyclicals, turnarounds. There's all, we're going to learn about these in chapter 3. One of his biggest finds was Dunkin' Donuts, because he liked the donuts. He turned his Magellan fund into a huge industry success, racking up 29% a year. Pretty amazing. To see what you're up against, One of the biggest capital appreciation funds in existence now is called the Growth Fund of America. Right. And if you go to the folks at the Growth Fund of America and say, why aren't you called the Capital Appreciation Fund of America? They would say, excuse us, sorry, we were the Growth Fund of America before this title of capital appreciation was even around. So that's why you have to know your mutual funds inside and out. And there are only 12,000 of them. So what did we do with the scramble sheet? What we did with the scramble sheet is we put aggressive growth and growth, and then wrote capital appreciation around them, because they tend to be lumped in with the aggressive growth and growth funds, and some capital appreciation funds are quite aggressive, and some are not. So you have to know your fund, but that's what you're up against. So we have aggressive growth, growth, and capital appreciation. They're all fairly spicy. Now, the next category is my personal favorite, and that's called growth and income. Growth is capital gains. The value of the stock goes up because the value of the company is going up. But income is from dividends. So these mutual funds will emphasize companies that are growing. Yes, we want companies that are growing, but we also want dividends. And dividends are distributions of the earnings. And we'll discuss dividends in detail when we get to stocks, because dividends don't lie. Some people refer to these as a blend of growth and value. Sometimes if they're not able to generate enough income, they may own some bonds to generate some income. But typically the primary emphasis is on capital gains. Some will emphasize rising dividends. They're my favorite growth and income funds that go for growth and also go for growing dividends. And so what do we say this is at the buffet table? This is your main dish, your pasta, your meat and potatoes, whatever, you know, the entree. It's what you should put, in my humble opinion, around 40, 50% or more on your plate. In fact, for many people, this is the best way to start, in my humble opinion, is with a growth and income fund. I like global growth and income funds, but everyone's different. Got it? So this is, let's go to the scramble sheet. This is our pasta. This is our entree. All right. What happens is people will lump another type of mutual fund called a value fund in with growth and income. But we have to be careful, because the word value is used in a few different ways in the industry, and we'll discuss this more later on when we get to stocks. That's the problem. You know, should you put mutual funds before stocks or stocks before mutual funds? We do mutual funds first because they're so important, and we'll do stocks later. So my apologies. These mutual funds seek stocks that are undervalued in the market by investing in shares that have low PE multiples. And I did, what are physical education? No, price to earnings multiples. And we'll discuss price to earnings ratio in chapter 3, and then chapter 4, and then chapter 5. And then, you know, it's a very important statistic. In other words, they're looking for companies that are out of favor for whatever reason. They're in a slump. A few years ago, energy was in a big slump until the Ukrainian war, until Russia invaded Ukraine, and then energy stocks all of a sudden became very popular again. And as we said, people are going to lump these together, but they're not necessarily the same. So you have to know your mutual fund. Now, the next category is the least riskiest of stock funds. And they're still stock funds, so they're still risky. Equity income funds. Now, if I were king of the world, which I'm not, I would say, don't call them equity income funds. Call them stock dividend funds. Because equity means stocks, and income from stocks is dividends. These are mutual funds that emphasize current income and capital preservation. Notice that's the first time we've used the word capital preservation, right? Because we know stocks are going to go down. But this one is saying, well, we don't want to go down too far. By investing primarily in high-yielding, income-producing common stocks, boring companies like railroads and food companies and utilities and real estate investment trusts. These companies are not growing fast at all. I mean, how much more Cheerios can you eat? But still, they're there and they're earning money and they're throwing off dividends. And when the markets fall, these guys don't fall anywhere near as far as the high-flying growth stocks. You see, even, yeah, right? Eat well, sleep well. They also will invest in bonds to generate income when the investment advisor believes that stock prices have risen to levels that threaten capital appreciation. Now, in the new economy, the dot-com craze of the late 90s, these things were just poo-poo. We don't want these old economy stocks, these old economy mutual funds. Get rid of them. You know what? They held up very well when the organic matter hit the ventilating device in 2000 to 2002, and high-flying internet stocks that never made a dime of earnings fell 90%. Right. Diversification. It didn't help them in 2000. It did help them in 2008 because the growth fund stock fell 50, 60%, 70%. The growth in income fell 40%, 50%. The equity income funds fell about 30%. Still not fun. Now, what do we call these guys on our buffet? Huh? What should we call these guys on our buffet? Oatmeal. Is oatmeal exciting? No. It's kind of boring, isn't it? But it's good for you. It's good for you. Look what it does for horses, right? So these are the boring mutual funds. And I'm a big fan of these, especially when you get older in your 50s, 60s, and 70s. These are great funds for people who don't want to lose too much money, but they want to, you know, get involved in the stock market. Cool? Okay, so you got that spectrum from the most riskiest to the least riskiest. Because now what we're going to do is we're going to overlay two other categories on top of it. We're going to now look at the size of the company, the capitalization, which is a fancy word for how big is the company. And there are three major categories: the Papa Bear, Mama Bear, and the Baby Bear. Large cap, mid cap, small cap. We're not talking about hats, folks. We're talking about how big the company is. And we'll discuss in detail the categories in Chapter 3 when we get to stocks. Now, who do you think's the riskiest? Who do you think is the least riskiest? Large cap, small cap. Right, large cap is the least riskiest because these are companies that have the roots deep in the economy. Small cap are the riskiest because they're small and they get buffeted around by the winds of change. And mid-cap is somewhere in the middle. And then we're going to overlay on top of the other categories whether or not it's a domestic, global, or international. What we call domesticity. It's a fancy word for where do they get their mail, right? Where are they headquartered? Remember, domestic means based in the United States, international based outside the United States, and global means anywhere. And, you know, domestic typically would be, especially many years ago, less risky, whereas foreign, international, overseas would be more risky, and global would be somewhere in the middle. But as we said back in Chapter 1, that distinction is sort of disappearing, and the world is becoming global, and it's not perfect, but it's what's happening. So, can you see now how we could wind up with 12,000 different mutual funds? Because now we have to have all these different permutations. Oh, it's a global large cap growth fund, or it's a domestic small cap aggressive growth fund. Pick one from column A, one from column B, and one from column C. And if you've taken statistics, and you've learned about permutations, now you can see why so many mutual funds were created. Because if one company had a domestic small cap aggressive growth fund company, mutual fund, then the others all had to say, me some too. Yeah, okay. Which in my humble opinion is not necessarily in the best interest of the investors. But that's what you're up against. You're going to see thousands of mutual funds with all different types of permutations and strategies and the like. On top of that, there are regional funds. funds that invest just in Canada or Japan or the Far East or Latin America. Personally, I'm not a big fan of these. Why? Because why do we like mutual funds? Professional money management and diversification. When you invest in a mutual fund that just invests in Eastern Europe or Northern Europe or Japan or China, whatever, I'm not trying to say they can't do a good job. There used to be a mutual fund, I don't think it's around anymore, that just invested in California companies. Well, California is the fifth or sixth largest economy in the world, so it made sense. It's a big hunting ground. But that's why, personally, I'm a big fan of global funds. I want my mutual fund manager to be able to go anywhere in the world to find the best companies. And there are people who disagree with me. What most notably was the co-founder of Vanguard Funds, Jack Bogle, and we've quoted from Mr. Bogle. He was more inclined to recommend to people just stay at United States. Just stay with the United States companies. We have the best accounting in the world. Well, that's not true anymore. Other countries have good, as good or better. But he makes a good point. You know, when you invest in a company like Coca-Cola, 80% of their money they earn from outside the United States. So you're investing in global companies when you invest in some of these companies based here in the United States. But what about the world's largest food company, Nestle, right? Or the world's largest tire company, Michelin, and then Bridgestone is another big one, and Goodyear. So I'm a big fan of global. Emerging markets for decades, from 1970s, 80s, 90s, and into the 2000s, were just going gangbusters with humongous, that's not a word, tremendous, humongous, whatever, huge amounts of volatility. But since the global financial crisis, they have not given good returns. And many people, myself included, expect that to change. I expect, it doesn't mean I'm right, but that's where the growth is. That's where the demographic growth, China is shrinking, so that's a problem with them. But, and so is Russia, but the countries in Southeast Asia, Latin America, Africa, Eastern Europe, they are growing their populations, and that means they're growing their economies. So emerging markets, again, regional emerging markets, take a little bit of money and put it in your, take a little bit of the fund and put it on your plate, but not a whole lot. Especially if you work, say you work in Latin America and you see it's booming, it's doing really well, then go ahead, put a little bit more, but I don't think you should do a whole lot. Now, sector funds are very popular with some people. They call it sector rotation or sector strategy, because these mutual funds will just invest in energy companies or technology companies or healthcare companies or leisure companies or wireless companies or whatever. So they are concentrating their fund in companies in a single sector of the economy. Again, we buy mutual funds for diversification, not for concentration, but everyone's different. Especially if you happen to work in that industry and you see that, oh my goodness, things are changing and it's doing really well, let's buy some of that sector fund. Now, if anybody tries to sell you a market timing fund, just tell them, thank you very much, no thank you, because they're dumb. It's an old saying from a very famous investor of the mid-20th century. Don't try to time the market. It can only be done by liars. And some people actually believe they can do it, and they might get it right every once in a while. You know, sell before the market falls, buy before the market goes up. Good luck. Nobody's been able to reliably predict that. Sure, there's lots of predictions, but most of them are wrong. So you got it, folks? That's the left side of our mutual fund scramble sheet. Because now we're going to trundle on over to the right side and take a look at bonds, loans, fixed income investments, fixed income funds. These invest in various kinds and grades of bonds with income as the primary objective. Yeah, you're not buying a bond fund for growth. You're buying it for income. We're going to do the same thing. We're going to go from the riskiest to the least riskiest. So here we are at high yield bond funds, also called junk bond funds. Doesn't sound good, does it? Junk. When we get the bonds, we're going to find out what junk means. These tend to look more like stock funds. Why? Because of what's called correlation. Bonds typically don't do the same thing that stocks do. It's very rare. Sometimes they do. But high yield bonds, junk bonds, tend to follow the stocks because they work more like stocks do. Not nearly as good a return, but still, they follow the stock market more often. These, again, they're part of the spice that you might want a little bit on your plate. I don't recommend these to anybody. I certainly don't invest in them. The next category are the corporate bond funds. These are bonds that are issued by very high quality companies. We're going to talk about the rating system that is used to rate bonds according to their safety and their probability of defaulting on the loan. And then muni bonds, insured muni bonds and muni bonds. It's very cool to have an insured muni bond fund, but typically you're not going to get as much interest from them. Why? Because they're insured, right? Of course. You're going to sleep better, so you're not going to eat as well. These are very popular with high net worth individuals. Why? Because the income is free from federal taxes. It's part of the Constitution, United States. The feds can't tax the states and local governments. The local governments and states can't tax the feds. So the muni bonds are free tax. IRS doesn't like that term tax-free. They like the term tax-exempt. How do you like that? Okay. But the feds can't touch their interest. And if you buy a muni bond that's based in your state, in our case, California, the state of California says, hey, cool, you invested in California. It doesn't matter where it is. It doesn't matter where they, in California, up and down the state. You don't have to pay California state income taxes. So for that reason, these things are very popular with very high net worth, high income individuals. And then the last category are U.S.-backed and government bond funds. These tend to be lumped in together, and we'll see why later on when we get to bonds. But U.S.-backed bonds are not actually issued by the United States government. But for decades, there was an implicit guarantee that the U.S. would come to the rescue of these entities. Of course, the Congress people and the presidents, and they would always say, no, they're not. We're not guaranteeing these things. These things are, we sponsored them a long time ago, but they're on their own now until 2008-9. When the organic matter hit the ventilating device and the U.S. had to come to the aid of Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. You might have heard of these. We'll discuss those in detail when we get the bonds much later on. So you see, it's the same idea. We have the most risky bond funds, high yield, junk, corporate, municipal, U.S.-backed and U.S. Treasury, very, very similar. And we go from the most riskiest to the least risky. Realizing that bond funds in general are far less risky than stock funds, okay? Bond funds typically don't go down. Sometimes they do. It's very rare. 2022 was one of those rare instances. But before that, you had to go back many years for them to have a big downturn. I think it was 1994, right? Okay. As we did with stocks, we're now going to overlay two other categories. We're going to overlay the maturity of the bond. And there are three categories, long-term, intermediate-term, and short-term. Now, as we talked about in Chapter 1, long-term usually means 5, 7, 10, 20 years. Intermediate-term, 3, 4, 5 years. And short-term, 1 or 2 years. So what do you think is the riskiest? You might think, well, long-term, large cap, short-term, small cap, intermediate, kind of like mid. No, they have nothing to do with one another. Don't confuse the large cap, mid cap, small cap that we learned about in stocks with these maturities. It's actually the opposite. Short-term bond funds are the least riskiest. Long-term bond funds are more risky. Now, when you think about it, it makes sense. If you're going to get your money in 1 or 2 or 3 years, that's a whole lot less time for things to go wrong than if you're going to get your money in 10, 20, 50, 10, 20, 30 years, right? And intermediate term is somewhere in between. So just be careful of that distinction. Actually, short-term bond funds, as the maturity gets closer and closer to the time when they mature, they start to look like money markets. They start to look like short-term investments, right? And that's exactly what some of these money market mutual fund municipal funds, the ones, the tax-free that you looked up in chapter one, and you're going to maybe look up in chapter two as one of your funds. As those bonds get closer and closer to maturity, they often will stuff them into those money market funds. And we're talking, you know, 3 months, 6 months, you know, very, very close to maturity. And then just as we did with the stocks, we're going to overlay domestic, global, and international. So this is it, folks. Pick one from column A, one from column B, one from column C. This one is a domestic, long-term, high-yield junk bond. Right. So that's why there are thousands of different mutual funds. Okay. Now, the next category in our risk versus from the most riskiest to least riskiest is actually called balance funds. And we made quick mention of these in the first presentation here. Balance funds are mutual funds whose objective is to generate a balanced return of both current income and long-term capital gains. Balance funds have been around for decades, and some have done very well over that time. Invest in both stocks and bonds. And we'll discuss this 60-40 split, although it doesn't have to be 60% stocks, 40% bonds, but that's a very typical allocation. And the allocation, of course, can change as the investment environment changes. There's a reason why we like stocks about 60%, bonds 40%. One of the old nation's oldest balance fund is called the American Balance Fund. How's that for a generic name? It's been around in one form or another since 1937. And I love this. In their prospectus, they say, we run the fund as managed as if it were the complete United States investment program of the prudent investor. I just love that word, prudent, prudente. Yeah, what they do, this is in their prospectus, folks. They say, we will never be more than 75% stocks, 25% bonds, and we will never be less than 50% stocks and 50% bonds. So they keep that balance. Are you with me? Now, here's where it gets a little tricky. We put balance funds in between stock and bond funds, because that makes sense, right? But theoretically, they are can be, doesn't usually turn out in reality this way, but they can be less risky than stock or bond funds. Huh? That doesn't make any sense. If you put something that's fairly risky, like stocks, with something that's less risky, like bonds, you would think it would be a mix of the two. And it is, but theoretically, because stocks and bonds tend to go in opposite directions, the risk cancels itself out. Now, that's the theory. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But for many investors, especially those who are terrified, even if they're younger, I don't think they should have any bonds personally. Some people say, you should always have a little bit of bonds. But when they're young, 30s, 20s, 30s, even in their early 40s, nah. When you get into your later 40s, 50s, 60s, you need some bonds, right? But for those people, I think a balance fund is a great choice. And especially as you get older like me, my wife and I have a whole lot of balance funds because we're old. And I don't have as much stocks as bonds as I really should have, according to my age. But hey, I've been doing this for a long time now. And I lived through 2000 to 2002 and 2008 and 9 and then 2020 and then 2022. And I didn't panic, thankfully. Who knows? You never know. Emotions are very powerful, motivating devices. Now, again, here's where it's going to get a little tricky. Because lumped in with balance funds is another category called asset allocation. These mutual funds spread investors' monies across stocks, bonds, and mutual money market securities, cash. They're very similar to balance funds, and they are lumped into balance funds, but they are not the same. With some of these asset allocation bonds, and you might see tactical allocation or strategic allocation, some strange name, but do your research. The investment advisor often more diligently tries to fine-tune the allocation as market conditions change. Whereas, as we said, with balanced funds, they try to keep 60-40, maybe 50-50, 70-30. They try to keep the balance. An asset allocation fund might say, oh, let's put everything into cash because the bond market, the stock market's going to fall. Oh, let's put everything in the bonds. This is dumb. It's not a smart thing to do. For all their hype, and there is a lot of hype, the returns of many asset allocation funds are very close to balance funds. Some trail badly because they timed the market badly. And we all know that timing the market can only be done by liars. In 2002, this was my first serious bear market, although I lived through 1987. But I only had a few stocks at the time. That was a long time ago. It was near the end of 2002, and there were some signals that we were coming close to the end. One of the biggest signals were the bozos, the representatives from Nationwide on your backside, who told me that their allocation fund was all in cash. And I thought, okay, right, that means the market's going to go up, right? Because these idiots are terrified of the market going down even further. It had gone down 3 years in a row. The S&P 500, with often a list of stocks, went down almost 50%, like 49.6 or something like that. The NASDAQ had gone down 80%. So we were already near the bottom. Now, no one knows when the bottom is going to hit, right? But they picked it perfectly. It's called a contrarian indicator. When somebody you know is the worst stock picker you've ever met and they're all in cash, that probably means the stock market's going to go up. And when they're all in stocks, that probably means the stock market's going to go down. Ooh, is it too late to get in? Ooh, is it too late to get out? So be careful, be wary, in my humble opinion, of asset allocation funds. Look for truly balanced funds that keep the balance. Now, the last category, and we already covered these guys, the least risky are money market mutual funds. And as we said, they're actually called money market funds. People don't usually say money market mutual fund. These invest in those treasury bills, commercial papers, bankers' acceptance notes that we talked about, or very short-term municipal securities that allow us to have tax-free income. They are essentially as safe as guaranteed money market accounts at a bank or credit union, since they invest in exactly the same securities, but they are not guaranteed. They're going to have the same disclosures that stock and bond funds have. This fund may lose money. But if you really are interested in this phenomenon called breaking the buck, just type breaking the buck into the search engine of your choice, and you're going to see thousands of articles about what happens when somebody does something really stupid and loses money in a money market mutual fund. They drop a penny. And when that happens, the whole world sits up and looks, what did you do? You goofballs. The last time this happened was 2008, and the Federal Reserve Bank, sorry about that, came to the rescue and bailed out the industry wraps their arms around them and they make sure everyone gets paid and tries to relax. It's not as bad as it sounds, although it does sound bad, right? You don't want to lose money in a money market mutual fund. And it's just not going to, especially if you go with a reputable firm that's been around for decades and doesn't do stupid things. What was the stupid thing they did? They invested in Lehman Brothers commercial paper. And that's when Lehman Brothers went under, which started the dominoes falling. And the Federal Reserve and the Treasury said, you know, maybe that wasn't a good idea to let Lehman Brothers fail. And that's when they started propping up all Wachovia and Washington Mutual and AIG. And as Ben Bernanke said, the Federal Reserve chairperson, I held my nose and I wrote the check. Slide 51. Well, you knew it had to happen, right? Mutual funds of mutual funds. These are called lifestyle funds, target date funds. And in fact, it's part of your assignment is to look at the TSP, Thrift Savings Plan. Those of you in the military or in the government, this is going to look very familiar. And you're going to take a look at what they call the lifestyle funds. Some people call them retirement funds. Some people call them target date funds. And why are these popular? For actually a very good reason. When people are confronted with 90 choices in their 403b plan or 401k plan, they don't know where to start, right? And it turns out that you give people fewer choices, they're more likely to join. That's why I love that TSP. There are five choices. And, you know, others could have a little bit more, but these five are very good choices, as you'll see. So you walk into your company and they say, hey, we got this 401k plan and here, go to this website or whatever you want to join, or some will automatically sign you up for it. And you have no idea, right? So you are told, or maybe they do it automatically, you're 30 years old, you're probably going to retire in 30 years, so, or maybe longer. So you find the retirement 2055 or 2060. Or your kids are going to go to college in 7 years. So you go to the college 2030 fund. And what the company then does is it populates the mutual fund with other mutual funds that match the time horizon. Do you remember the Z shares in the T. Rowe Price? That's what they use. T. Rowe Price uses the Z shares in their target date, target retirement funds. And as you get closer to the time when you're going to retire or when your kids are going to college, they will make the investment choices more and more conservative. They will get less aggressive and more conservative. It's called the glide path. If you can, a bit of trivia, not important. So as the time horizon shortens, the mutual fund changes the mix of mutual funds. Mutual funds of mutual funds. And there are also target risk funds. You say, you know, I want to invest in stocks, but I'm really worried. So they'll put equity income funds in there, you know, not really risky funds. Why are these so popular? Well, as we said, they make it easy for people to make decisions. Plus, here's the kicker. When you start a job, the companies wanted you to invest in the 403b, the 401k, because they don't have pension plans anymore. They have a pension plan for you, a personal pension plan, your employer-sponsored retirement account. But they did not want to choose something for you because they don't want to get sued. If you choose an investment which turns out to be not suitable for an individual, they can sue you. That's why brokers have what's called errors and omissions insurance. So the companies would typically automatically put them into a mutual fund that was the least riskiest, so they couldn't scream and holler and say, but I'm so worried, I don't want to lose any money. They'd put them in the money market account, or sometimes called the stable fund, which, if you're 23 years old, that's really, really stupid. You're going to be working for the next 40 years or whatever. So the Congress, again, sometimes the people in Washington can play nice in the sandbox. They change the laws so that if your company automatically puts you into a 401k and they choose the retirement date fund that makes sense for you, they know how old you are, so they figure 2050 or 2040. Then you can't sue them. You can't come back and say, you did something really stupid. You put me in something unsuitable. So that's why these things are so popular now, because the companies don't want to get sued. I know, lot of lawyer jokes, and some of them are actually true stories. But before lawyers, pistols at dawn. So, you know, I'll pay the lawyer because I don't want to get shot at. Right. I don't want to take out my appendix either. So I'll pay the doctor and I'll pay the lawyer. They go to school for many years to learn how to do what they do. Slide 52. Now, how are we doing for time? Not bad. My apologies. He burbled on for 45 minutes. Specialty funds. For the most part, folks, you want to stay away from these things. Really, you know, middle-of-the-road funds, boring funds that have been around for decades and have done well in good times and bad times, and we're going to see some at the end of our chapter together. But these specialty funds, they're going to try to woo you with sounds of oh, we're going to get really, really good returns. You might have heard of hedge funds. These things are really, they're lumped in with mutual funds, but they are not mutual funds. They are totally different. And they're not under any regulatory, actually a little bit of regulatory oversight. They could take all your money and put it in one stock. Or put it into pork bellies, if those of you who might have seen the movie Trading Places. They traditionally were only open to sophisticated investors. But now, with as little as $5,000 or $10,000, you can get into a hedge fund. It's not smart. Their fees are tremendous. Now, some of these do really, really well, folks. Some of these people are really hot shots who just blow the lights out and whatever. But many don't. And you might have a hard time getting out of it because they usually have a certain time when you can actually pull the money out. So just stay away from them. There are funds that try to make money when the markets go down. They're called bear funds because a bull market is when the market's going up. A bear market's when it's going down. Again, not too smart. Markets go up about 3 or 4 times more often than they go down. So, sure, when they're going down, bear funds look great, but when they're going up, they look really poor. You could invest in mutual funds that actually invest in precious metals, gold, and other hard assets. I don't know how they get away with this, because how do you really know it's gold? It could be lead painted as gold. And where do they keep it? REITs are actually not a bad choice for many people. Real estate investment trusts, they look like stocks, but they're really real estate. They're the entities that run the shopping centers and warehouses and office buildings and hotels and the like. And so if you want to be a landlord without being a landlord, a real estate investment trust might be a good choice, and real estate investment trust mutual funds might be a good choice for you. The problem is there's just not that many of them, so they turn out to be like a sector fund, more like a concentrated sector fund, but you are investing in real estate as opposed to stocks or bonds. And then there are dozens and dozens of these boutique and exotic funds. Dear students, please stay far away from these things. You know, the choices are endless and so are the fees. The stock car stocks funds, what do you think they invest in? Stock car stocks funds, huh? Well, I have a hard time believing this, but the sport with the most spectators in the United States is not football. I mean, not talking on television. I'm talking about people going into the stands. Not baseball. It's NASCAR. 200,000 people on a Sunday go down to the track and watch people go around in the circle at 200 miles an hour. And what do you see on the cars and on the hats and on the coats? Sponsorship. The stock car stocks funds invest in the companies that sponsor NASCAR. Right. What's the Paws Tombstone Fund? Tombstones? Paws is the name of the mutual fund company. Tombstone was the fund. Right. They invested in mortuaries. Caskets. Well, everybody going to die someday. Maybe some of you younger folks, who knows, maybe not. But thankfully, so did the Paws Tombstone Fund. And then, folks, you cannot make this up. You can't make it up. The Chicken Little Growth Fund for people who were worried that the sky is falling. Look at it. You don't believe me? Look it up. There's the Timothy Fund for good Christians. There's funds for Muslims. There's just... What can I say? It's crazy. But it's part of the industry, and not a part that I hope you will be part of. Slide 53. Socially responsible funds, now called ESG, Environmental, Social, and Governance. These were mutual funds that actively and directly incorporate ethics and morality into the investment decisions. Now, these have been around for a long time. They started many decades ago with mutual funds that just simply stayed away from alcohol or tobacco, because there's many people, especially more religious folks, who just do not want to invest in alcohol or tobacco. And then in the 1970s, they moved to companies that don't pollute, build weapons or nuclear power plants, destroy the rainforest, and then companies that exploit labor. And it's surprising if there's any companies left to invest in. But silliness aside, many socially responsible and ESG funds have done actually quite well for their investors. Now, this is, again, a little serendipity. Why? Because technology companies tend to fit into this mold. And of course, they've done gangbusters the last few decades. Now there's a bit of a backlash against what people in politics are trying to make it's the outrage machine, the anti-woke. They're anti-woke. They call it environmental, social, and governance as wokeness, which is just another word for the N-word, in my humble opinion. It's just ginning up anger and hatred, but it's politics. Poly means many, and ticks are blood-sucking insects. Okay, slide 54. As a possible backlash to socially responsible funds and their perceived political overtones, there's a mutual fund called the Vice Fund. Oh yeah, you guessed it. They love tobacco, alcohol, corporate nasties, gambling defense firm. They changed their name a few times. And, you know, it's still a very small fund with high annual fees. Why? Because of economies of scale. It's actually managed to keep afloat since 2002. So look it up, the Vice Fund. Right. The industry. I love this industry. There's just so much going on that it's just never a dull moment. Slide 54. Now, slide 55. A company called Morningstar, and you might use them for your chapter 2 assignment, has been around for a while. Before them, there was a company, still around, it's part of Reuters now, called Lipper, that was the staid and very prudent mutual fund research company. Well, Morningstar decided to spice things up a bit, and they created what are called the style boxes. And they are also, it's not solely responsible, but they're also responsible for creating this huge mishmash, this huge explosion of different companies, because they would give what is called a style box to each and every mutual fund company, you know, large, value, medium, blend, small, growth, and blend meaning growth and income. Remember, we thought blend is sometimes called growth and income. And so people got the idea that they needed at least 9 different mutual funds, right? I need a fund for each individual style box. And it gave them a bit of a bad name. And they did a little mea culpa and created what's called ownership zones. You know, I don't use these things. Nobody I know uses them. I don't recommend that you use them, but they're out there. And you're going to go to Morningstar.com, maybe or maybe not, and you're going to see the style boxes with their ownership zones. Basically, they took a square, a rectangular, and turned it into an oval. That's basically what they did. Yeah. On Morningstar, you can find the new ownership zones on the portfolio tab on finance.yahoo.com. At least the last time I checked, you will see the old style boxes when you choose profile. So check it out, see what you think. But again, part of the reason that there's so many different mutual funds was because of these style boxes. And then finally, remember I told you that there are dozens of categories out there? As of January 2024, here are the dozens and dozens. I haven't counted them, but all the different categories that Morningstar publishes in their reports. Yeah, don't even try to remember all of them. Focus on the ones that we have discussed in this presentation, because we're going to hold you to it on the exam. But more importantly, you're going to be the investment guru for your friends, family, and coworkers. So you have to be able to explain to them, not in detail, folks, just in one or two sentences, what a growth and income fund does, or what a junk bond, high yield bond fund does. So study these categories however you study, flashcards, you know, use the scramble sheet, whatever, because we want you to be awesome. And that means you have to have time on task. There's no substitute. We always wish we could just open up your head and pour it in and boom. And there are some people, boy, I'm not one of them. There are some people, they see it once, they hear it once, they read it once, boom, they got it. They're very rare. Most of us have to study. Oh, well. Thank you so much for being in our class. We're on the downhill side of mutual funds. Very important chapter. Study hard. Bring honor and glory and to your family, to your friends, to your coworkers, to Southwestern Community College, and to, most importantly, you. See you in our next presentation.